To call the meeting back in order. I'm trying to take a list. Is there a show of hands of people interested in the Russian River Watershed Program, if that's why you're here? Okay. And a show of hands for the small disadvantaged communities in the financial program. Well, it looks very even, and so I'm going to just stick with the agenda. And I don't know how far we'll get before lunch. So with that, I'm going to call up the update on the Russian River Watershed Pathogen Indicator Bacteria, TMDL, and Charles Reed and Alita Mangelsdorf.
Good morning, Chairman Corbett. My name is Alita Mangelsdorf, and I'm a senior environmental scientist with the Regional Water Board and lead our planning unit, which includes TMDL development. I'll let Charles introduce himself.
And I'm Charles Reed. I'm a senior water resource control engineer, and I am project manager for the Russian River TMDL and also the lead for the land disposal and groundwater permitting unit here.
So we're here today to give you an update on our progress in finalizing a total maximum daily load for pathogen indicator bacteria in the Russian River watershed. Here's an outline of the topics that we're going to cover today. One key thing I'd like to point out is that the Russian River watershed has lands in both Mendocino and Sonoma counties, so the efforts that we're involved in here involve coordination with both of those counties. Today we're going to be reviewing the update that we gave you in November of last year, which was originally intended to be a hearing on the TMDL, and due to the kind and volume of comments that we got, we offered as an information item instead and returned to the project to make some substantial revisions based on public comment. So I'm going to go over the kinds of issues that we covered in that November update, describe the progress that we've made on several particular elements of the TMDL action plan, but most notably the element that relates to septic systems. And here is an acronym that is a little bit awkward. We say OTS for OWTS. It stands for on-site waste treatment systems, and those are synonymous really here for the term septic system. There are a couple things to know about OTS, and one is that the state adopted a statewide OTS policy, which this board adopted into the basin plan last year and has now been approved by the Office of Administrative Law, so it is a policy of our basin plan. But the Russian River was specifically carved out of that policy because the TMDL will essentially establish the program, the OTS program for the Russian River watershed. I'm going to talk about the progress that we've made in coordinating with the counties, specifically defining the roles and responsibilities between our agency and the county agencies, talk about progress we've made on identifying sources of funding and connecting up our Division of Financial Assistance at the State Board with the counties, give you an update on the state's development of a new bacteria objective. This is a pathogen indicator bacteria objective designed specifically to protect recreational water use. And so this is relevant, of course, to our pathogen indicator bacteria, TMDL. And then describe next steps for our internal work to complete the project and be ready to bring you a proposal for adoption consideration. So going back to last November, we had released about a year ago a draft staff report and TMDL action plan for public review. After releasing that package of documents, we then held three staff-led workshops throughout the Russian River watershed, so down in Monterio here in this building, and then also up in Ukiah. And then we the public comment period closed. We received many, many letters, and a lot of letters concerned about a number of things, but some of the things that came to the fore were concerns about the part of the TMDL action plan that addressed septic systems, and some concerns about needing better coordination with the counties, identifying more precisely the kinds of funding that would be available to do the work that's going to be necessary to solve the problem of pathogen discharges to the watershed. And as a result of those and many other comments, we brought, rather than a hearing in November, an information item. We provided an overview of those public comments, and one of the key outcomes of our review of the comments and then the staff report and action plan itself is that there are significant changes we need to make to the implementation program, specifically with respect to septic systems or OTS, but that we don't need to make any revisions, substantive revisions to the technical analysis. The technical analysis is sound, and we will be maintaining or retaining that work in our final document. But we did offer a revised concept back in November for how we could deal with OTS that would be different from what had been proposed and was seeking to address the substance of the many comments that we received on that topic. We also offered a list of things that we needed to follow up on, coordinating with the Sonoma County and Mendocino County, identifying public funding specific for technical assistance, program implementation and construction in this watershed, establishing what a role of a citizens advisory group might be, and then finalizing our responses to written comments, revising the staff report and action plan, and then going out for a second 45-day public comment period. So I'm going to focus for a little bit right now on the proposed new approach to managing the potential for discharges from septic systems to the Russian River and its tributaries with the risk of causing further impairment. And this new approach would divide our approach into three phases. Now, a key thing to be thinking about as I go through these phases is that we share some responsibility with the counties, both Sonoma County and Mendocino County, in the implementation of this three-phase program. And part of what we're still engaged in right now is a discussion with the counties about how to divide those roles and responsibilities. So we've gotten very, very close to a good understanding of how that is best divided, but we still are finalizing that agreement. In phase one, we would think about the first phase, and just to interrupt myself for a moment, these are phases of implementation that happen after the TMDL is adopted. So it becomes regulation in our basin plan, and then we would formally initiate these phases. So phase one is essentially a risk-based assessment, and the idea is to be able to determine what area within the Russian River watershed where there are septic systems present represent the highest risk of delivery of pathogenic waste to the watershed. And one of the ways to do this is to be able to define a geographic boundary around the main stem and its tributaries that represent those parcels of land with the highest risk. And this is something that we got a lot of comment on in our original draft. People were very concerned about having something more explicit than simply characteristics of a high-risk area and wanted, in fact, a clear geographic boundary so that they could determine if their own property fell within that boundary or outside of that boundary. And the basic notion of the statewide OTS policy, which will apply here in terms of our implementation, is that within this high-risk boundary area, we would have a special set of provisions that applied that would help to reduce the risk of pathogenic waste delivery. This is another acronym, APMP, stands for Advanced Protection Management Program. This is an acronym of the statewide OTS policy. And so in our previous draft, I think we called the area a high priority area. And so I'll be referring to that high priority area here as the APMP program area. Essentially, what needs to happen in terms of our risk assessment is once we define this boundary, we have to communicate with all the parcel owners within that boundary and ask for some information regarding the state of their septic systems for those that have septic systems on their property. And so that's going to be an information gathering phase. Phase two then is planning. We have to sort through all of those, what will likely be tens of thousands of communications, and determine which of those parcels have septic systems that are likely to be failing or be substandard and require some further effort on the part of the county or ourselves to determine their condition and potentially be upgraded. And of course, associated with that is the need to ensure that there is sufficient funding, a funding mechanism put aside that allows for landowners, property owners who need financial assistance to be able to acquire that assistance. So we'll be developing a plan for how to identify those failing and substandard systems, how to fund upgrades for those individuals who need help with funding. That might be the point at which a citizens advisory group could be useful in helping us determine where there are perhaps groups of septic systems that where the upgrade of them is better, the pathogenic waste control is better done by some sort of community system rather than ongoing septic systems. And then phase three, of course, is the full implementation. This would be probably not unlike the Garcia, maybe not 50 years in the doing, but certainly decades in the doing, slowly but surely making our way through the list of failing and substandard systems, looking for ways to upgrade in a priority fashion, and setting appropriate timelines to ensure that everybody has adequate time to do the upgrade work that's necessary. And as I say, they're part of the solution may very well be community systems where either small community systems or larger, depending on the outcome of our risk assessment and early planning and the guidance and advice we get from citizen advisory groups. So I'm gonna dwell a little bit on the work that we've been doing in trying to define the APMP boundary area. This again is an issue that came up from a lot of public commenters in our original draft. The basic idea is, as I said earlier, is to define the boundary within which special provisions will apply. We got the request that this be a geographic boundary so that people could know whether they were in or out. And we are looking at defining this boundary based on two basic principles that came out of our TMDL assessment. One is that the proximity of a system to a surface water body is important in terms of the potential risk of delivery that it poses. And the second is that the density of parcels with septic systems, also with proximity to a water body, also matters in terms of the risk that there is to pathogenic waste discharge. So we use these two factors in looking at how we might define this APMP boundary. Now I'm going to show you a table here, and we'll spend a few minutes on this. It's filled with a lot of words and some big numbers, and so I want to be sure that you understand it. And primarily what I want you to understand is that this is just a concept of how we might define the APMP boundary. It's not yet a proposal, but this is after messing around with geographic information, this is one way in which we think we can use these two risk factors to define those parcels that would be within versus those that are out of an APMP boundary. You'll see three columns to the right. The first is from Mendocino County. The geographic data we have from Mendocino is based on the National Hydrography Data Set, and we have basic parcel information. For Sonoma County, we have slightly more refined data. We have stream-mapped data that is more refined than the National Hydrography Set. We also have information related to the whether or not a parcel has a building on it. And so that helps us to refine from the parcel, the larger parcel data set, we can focus only on those that have a building and therefore have a greater likelihood of a septic system, whereas the vacant parcels clearly are less likely. There are three potential ways that we could define an APMP boundary based on the particular mechanism that I'm going to describe here. The first, in all three cases, and each of the rows represents a different scenario, in all three scenarios, the thing they have in common is that there would be a buffer around the Russian River main stem of 600 feet from the shoreline. And that's a buffer width that comes directly out of the statewide OTS policy. So we're just lifting that out of the state policy and applying that to the Russian River to see what that looks like. And so that relates to or gathers the fact that proximity to a water body matters in terms of the risk of delivery. The next thing we did was look at parcel density. And so we analyzed parcel density across the watershed, created a distribution of those parcel densities, and we looked at parcel densities within 1,200 feet of any water course. And this was just simply doubling the 600-foot buffer that is identified in the OTS policy. We doubled that as a way of looking at the added factor of density and the degree to which we could define a boundary around high-dense parcels. So we looked at the highest 10% of the parcel density distribution, 5%, and 1%. And just to get a sense of the number of parcels that would be involved in each of those scenarios. So if we look at the highest 10% of the parcel density distribution, in Mendocino County, we see something like 4,800 parcels that fall within that boundary, including 600 feet of the Russian River. In Sonoma County, we're looking at something just over 45,000 parcels. But if we focus on just those with buildings, that drops by more than half. Then the next row is 5% density distribution. For Mendocino County, it's something like 2,800. For Sonoma County, I'll just be looking at the parcels with buildings now. That's something like almost 13,000. And then for the 1%, so this is the most dense set of parcels with the proximity to water body. In Mendocino County, it'd be just shy of 1,000, and in Sonoma County, it would be 5,575. So again, these are not, this is not a proposal yet, but it is just a concept of how we're looking at how the boundary might be drawn and the number of parcels that would be involved. So I'm going to show now a series of maps that show you on, in picture format what that looks like. The first one is going to represent the 10% parcel density, the second one, the 5%, and the third one, the 1%. Again, this is just a concept for discussion purposes only. You'll see the buffer around the Russian River here. That's the 600-foot buffer. That's what each of these maps have in common. If you think of all of these blobbed colors as being green, I think it might be easier to understand what the map is trying to depict. We were unable to make the color changes in time for the presentation. But the idea is that all of these blobbed areas outside of this ribbon associated with the Russian River itself are areas that have parcel densities that are within the 10% of the parcel density distribution and lower. So it captures the full array, 1, 5, and 10%. Now I'm going to show you the next map, which excludes the 10%, and so looks only at 5% and lower. And that's what that looks like. And now I'm going to exclude 5% and only look at 1%. And that's what that looks like. There's all sorts of nuances here. In this particular example, we didn't bound the other named impaired or listed impaired water bodies. And that was largely because the listings were made in different fashions. Some listed the whole sub-watershed. Others listed just individual reaches. And so we're still talking about how we might best represent that in terms of this APMP boundary. A key point I want to make here is that the decision to define this boundary based on parcel density and the appropriate density is a policy decision. We've done the best we can to apply an objective approach to using what we know are key risk factors, the proximity and parcel density, to generating a boundary. But the decision about whether we look at 10, 5, or 1% parcel density is clearly a policy decision.
In the last, you made a comment that we're only showing the 600-foot buffer around the main stem. But another consideration is that we also look at that same buffer applying to the tributaries to the Russian River. So that's still on the table as an option.
That's right. That's right. And that could go a number of different ways. We might look at bounding the Laguna to Santa Rosa Creek, Green Valley Creek, Dutch Bill Creek, because those are the other listed water bodies. We could look, or we could look more broadly. As I said, the reason we chose not to represent that here was that, for example, the listing in the Laguna includes all the tributaries. And when you bound all of those small tributaries with a 600-foot buffer, the whole watershed then turns green. And that didn't seem like it was useful for illustration purposes. But we could simply focus on the main stem of the Laguna, and that might be an approach.
Alita, if you can help me with some context here. So what we're looking at is, you know, pathogen indicator bacteria. So that I understand where we're going with this, we're not can bacteria pass through a septic system, go through the soil, and reach the water? Or are we concerned about nutrients leaching out of a septic system and feeding the background bacteria that's already in the water and causing that to bloom?
The studies that we did as part of the TMDL demonstrate that there are elevated levels of pathogenic indicator bacteria associated with septic systems and especially high density parcels. We have indication that through genetic testing that those indicator bacteria are related to humans. We don't have any sort of tracing study that shows a septic system leaching through the soil profile and entering the system. We did not do that kind of work.
Okay, so I still have my question. Bacteria is in the water. We got that right. I mean, that's just there. If nitrogen, phosphorus, other elements get to the water, they can cause whatever the baseline bacteria is already in the water, they can cause that to bloom.
Sure.
So what I'm trying to understand here is, as we're moving forward on this discussion, what is the target pollutant we are trying to arrest? Is it actually the organisms that we think are moving through the system, or is it the chemical elements that may be fueling the system that we're trying to arrest?
We are very much targeting the discharge of human and domestic animal fecal waste to the river. And so you're absolutely right that there is a component in which nutrient enrichment also fuels native bacteria growth, but we are very much targeting the discharge of human fecal waste, and so that is the loss of untreated or poorly treated fecal waste from leaking or substandard or failing septic systems to our either through surfacing, through stormwater discharge, or through some other sort of direct connection.
One other quick question, Alita. I meant to catch you on this earlier, but just so I'm clear, and I think I understand, but just so we're on the same page here, when you're talking about your buffer width, 600-foot width, is that a total 600-foot width from the center line of the stream, 300 on either side, or 600 feet on either side of the center line?
600 feet from each shoreline.
That's what I thought, but I wanted to be sure. Thanks.
One more question about the maps. It looks in each scenario like a pretty big concentration of the parcels that you enumerate in the table would be within urban footprints.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm imagining that a lot of these big numbers of parcels may actually end up being sewered parcels.
So we did exclude sewered parcels and roads and water bodies from the GIS data analysis. And so the actual number of parcels that are represented here represents parcels that likely have septic systems on them. They're not sewered. But the footprint that you see on the map includes sewered and unsewered parcels. And so the sewered parcels would just simply be excluded. We wouldn't be addressing them with this particular element of the program.
So even though there's a blob on the map, you're only counting the parcels in the blob that you think have septic
systems. Yes, so the blob represents a boundary. The parcels within that boundary will distinguish in terms of our initial outreach to those parcel owners. We'll distinguish between parcels that are sewered, those we won't need to contact, parcels that don't have a building, those we won't need to contact, and we'll focus on parcels that have a high likelihood of having a septic. We either know or have a high likelihood of having a septic system on them.
So in the 1% row, the 5,575 parcels in Sonoma County are parcels that you anticipate have septic systems within those areas?
That's right.
Okay, thank you.
So we have been engaged since our last conversation with you back in November of last year in discussions with Mendocino and Sonoma counties. Sonoma County in particular, we've been working pretty closely with over the last few months. We've gotten some good information from them that's helped in our efforts related to trying to determine how best to establish this APMP boundary. We've got parcel map data, stream mapping data, and some building permit records. We anticipate sitting down with both counties and bringing our preliminary analysis on the APMP boundary to them and getting some feedback. There surely are many ways in which we can refine the approach so that we have something that represents a practical and focused way of assessing addressing the most high-risk areas. We've also been engaged in some conversation with Sonoma County in the development of a memorandum of understanding, which would establish the roles and responsibilities of each of our agencies. Specifically, we're focused on the OTS problem itself, but also on recreational water use and homeless and farm worker encampments and illegal camping, and how best to address those issues, which are also identified in our TMDL as sources of pathogenic waste. We've had two meetings now, and our last meeting earlier this week was very productive, and we're getting much closer to an understanding of what the appropriate division of labor is. Our ability to finalize an implementation plan, including an action plan for your consideration, is dependent on our concluding those discussions and being clear about our appropriate division of responsibilities, but we're making very good progress in that area. We're also making some good progress in terms of identifying funding that might be useful for the implementation of this program. You know, you heard on the Garcia, the millions of dollars that have been applied in a non-point source setting. In this particular setting with this particular problem, there's likely to be a fair amount of construction that is necessary in terms of septic system upgrades. There's the potential, of course, for consideration of community systems. So we've been involved with conversations with the Division of Financial Assistance at the State Board, and have confirmed that there are state loans and grants available to address these sorts of issues. They're generally available to local agencies, nonprofit organizations, and tribes. And there are two items following this one that'll bring you more details related to that array of funds and their focused use. In particular for this project, we are hoping to line the counties up with funding to help conduct assessments and then feasibility studies where that's necessary with respect to community systems, to be able to establish some kind of low-interest loan program for homeowners who need financial assistance, for those who need to upgrade their systems, and then, of course, for construction of any facilities that might be necessary. We are going to continue our communication with the folks at the Division of Financial Assistance, but we've also, just this morning, hooked them up with representatives from Mendocino and Sonoma counties, and so they're now getting some good information about just the whole application process and how to engage with the State Board to be able to make use of some of those funds. And again, items 5 and 6 on your agenda will give you some more detail about those programs. The last little bit of update I wanted to give you is related to the State Board's work on updating the bacteria objective. We have in our basin plan a bacteria objective that addresses a number of issues, natural background, recreational use, and shellfish public, you know, public health protection related to shellfish harvesting. Our TMDL is generated primarily to focus on protection of recreational water use, and the State Board has been engaged for quite a while now in updating the bacteria objective or proposing to the State Board adoption of a bacteria objective that would be applied statewide. So essentially would replace the bacteria, the REC 1 bacteria objectives that regions have in their basin plans. The EPA has already established national criteria for bacteria, and we have that in our hands and use that as the basis for our TMDL in terms of the waste load and load allocations that we'll be proposing to you. The State Board has that same document in their hands, and the work that they're doing is designed to comport with the national criteria. So the bottom line is that the State Board is not yet ready to release a proposed objective. They have postponed their hearing till next summer with the public release of their proposals sometime later this fall. But I'm comfortable that we are both on the same track, and so though the timing is not ideal, we are deriving essentially the same conclusions. Next steps for us, so as to be ready to bring you a TMDL for consideration and adoption, we need to complete our negotiations with the counties on the roles and responsibilities associated with control of pathogen sources. We need to complete our work on defining this APMP boundary. That's a really critical part of being able to present what our hopes would be a successful program. And then we need to continue our work in developing funding strategies. I want to make the point that all of these things are really critical to our being able to finalize a TMDL action plan. And so we're making really good progress on that. And I'm going to describe a schedule here in a moment, which is ambitious but doable, but is dependent on our finalizing the work that we're now engaged on with the counties. We'll continue our coordination with the Division of Financial Assistance, in particular to help facilitate their interaction with the counties in the Russian River. And then we have the basic work of finalizing the documents. We have responses, draft responses written to all of the comments that we received last year. It's an enormous document, and I think we're going to try to shrink that down in preparation for the next round of public review. And then we have some revision to the staff report to address things in the CEQA chapter and the economics chapter and, of course, the implementation chapter. And then a fairly significant rewrite of the TMDL action plan with respect to OTS in particular. That'll go out for another 45-day public comment period. And we think we can have a draft package ready for that public release in November, which would allow us to have a workshop during the public comment period in December. And then dependent on how many comments we get as a result of the public comment period, we think we can be ready to bring you a final project in the spring of next year, earlier if we have a manageable amount of comments, and later if there are an enormous amount of comments. And as always, we encourage people who are interested in keeping track of this project and following along as we make progress to subscribe to our listserv. And we always invite people to call either Charles or myself if they have questions on any elements of the program. And with that, I conclude my presentation.
Any board member questions or comments?
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Alita. Charles, you didn't say much, but thank you, too.
She said it much better than I could have. One of my best.
Lunch, I think you were.
It was one of your best, Charles.
Yes, I agree.
Gosh, I'm sorry, Charles.
No, I said it first, so.
You did. All kidding aside, thank you. This is an enormous project, and there's no doubt about it, and it has enormous implications for Sonoma and Mendocino counties. And in all seriousness, looking forward then to having then the public document and revisions that, as you discussed, For one thing, just in the public participation, I think is absolutely key here. So as far as noticing, I just want to make a request here that when this goes out, to make all noticing as far and as wide as you can. It's I'm not encouraging you to get 5,575 letters, but if that were the case, then I think that perhaps that would be the success to make sure that we have an informed community, and at the same time inform partners that this actually is coming. This has been coming for a long time, and there's no doubt that it's gonna be a long and hard project. At the same time, I think, you know, a couple things. I think it's good to go forward with all intent here in a complete manner. So I look forward to seeing the revisions to the implementation program. One question to you, Lita. You described the three-phased approach, which I agree with. I've been an advocate for that. Do you envision that those run in parallel, those three elements, the risk-based assessment, the planning and implementation? In essence, if you pick priority area A, and there's 20 priority areas, and A gets done, does A start to move forward towards the planning part and implementation part, right? Is this is all in at once? Can it go forward in a general kind of everything starts to flow in parallel?
You raise an excellent point, and I think it's entirely possible that the way we approach that phased implementation is by looking at priority areas first, and as you say, running multiple phases depending on the area simultaneously. A large amount of that is dependent on how many parcels we wind up grabbing within an APMP boundary. Depending on the size of that number, you know, maybe our first effort is to just send out a mass mailing and then determine then how which geographic areas or which risk factors we want to address first in our phase two efforts. But there are multiple ways of dividing the priorities, so you're exactly right. We may very well run them in parallel.
Well, and the other thing, just take that apart one piece, is that the assessment part of this is develop clear and concise, you know, mechanisms and criteria for assessment, right? That, you know, right now we have a criteria that's based on a distance to a water body, and that's a fine way to sift it at first order to prioritize from that level. And I don't want to get too far ahead here on a revised document that's coming, but a request would be that we're clear and concise about that we're not just red light, green light, right? That this document should be holistic in its approach so that when properties are assessed, by the way, I believe my property's in that.
So you're going to get a letter, aren't you?
I'm totally getting a letter. That's Charles working on it right now.
Slam hard.
No, but... But the thing is like, you know, systems out here that have been upgraded, right? We heard that in the first round. Systems that meet existing criteria, great, you're out, that's it, fine. Mm-hmm. Maintain that thing. And then sift that. But that we have in this document coming that's clear, that
yes.
those are clear developed criteria on the way into this so that it's not ambiguous, that it is clear that there is a statewide standard here. The OTS policy was pretty clear, and it is the law of the state of California. And so we're going through that process here, and we're adding criteria to it based on the special nature of what we have here. By the way, I'm highly supportive of developing the funding mechanism for this. I look forward to what we're going to hear in these coming presentations. I know a little bit about it because we talked about it recently, but I think that is super key here also to develop those in parallel with this process. And I know you're working on that, so I'm highly supportive of that. But thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
It's all yours.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I guess first a comment and then a question, Alita. But in identifying the boundaries of the APMP, I guess I would caution you. I think it would be easy to establish boundaries that are somewhat subjective and arbitrary. And I guess to consider how we would ultimately defend those decisions if another metric if on a map like that if we knew there were some real hot spots of pathogen problems, you know, that could be another metric that could be added that would bolster why one area had a boundary and one area was left out. And my question is, I'm assuming that the parcel boundaries, it's not a one-size-fits-all. It could be each little community could have its own distinctive little boundary. Is that correct? You're not going to have one map and just put a big circle around everything. Each one of those little clusters may have a boundary around itself.
Well, that is the outcome of this particular, what we would define as a reasonably objective approach to defining the boundary, is that by looking at parcel density, which showed up in our technical analysis as a key factor in terms of risk of delivery, you wind up with these blobs. And so those blobs are going to be centered on given hot spots. And that was part of the testing of this particular way of establishing the boundary, is that it does catch those areas where we have monitoring data demonstrating elevated levels of fecal waste discharge.
I have many some concerns expressed, and a lot of it is I want to find a way to get this back on track time-wise. We have to be exceptionally careful when we start dealing with 45,000 parcels. I don't want to lose our staff for 20 years. So I think in the future, and we are sort of where we are, the implementation plans have to be a little bit more general and not specific, because once you get specific, we keep getting drawn deeper and deeper. The second thing I want to say is I understand the forces driving the individual on site, but typically that's a 3-year process for most, whether it's the city government, the state board. No one has been able to get through the controversy of on site. Notice, every renter wants to be noticed, every property owner wants to be noticed. Because you're dealing with potentially high costs, that will create a political reaction, and I hope we get all the MOUs signed early with the counties, because they're going to respond to the political heat, and typically on-site inspections do that. So I want to I can understand the in and out, but you may want a provision for future county petitions or additional details that can be submitted and approved by staff, because I don't want us to get into the end-all, be-all there. I just think it's a trap of our time and resources. And again, it would undermine the MOU at some point of responsibilities. If we take all the responsibility, and there's been that tendency politically in some counties, it's gotten so hot, they give it to the state because they don't want to touch it. We do not want the gift of the on-site at the regional implementation level. So I think we need to get, I do think a basic in and out is only fair to the citizens. They need to know, should I protest? Should I not protest on this? How does this affect me? Because these things have personal cost. So I can go there. I just want us to be very cautious. The second thing is we use the word confirmed availability of state and local grants. I think we can identify available state and local grants. We can't confirm it. First of all, the state legislature and Congress does that. They appropriate the money. We don't. But second of all, I don't want us to be misleading people that just because we think the program is a good one and will cover many of the, it may not cover everybody. And I don't want us to be hung up with the word confirmed. And then I do appreciate we're on track with the state on their bacterial objectives. But I do want an end game in case they have trouble adopting them. Sometimes these major statewide programs, when they get into the details, they find, oh, we need to consider this, and there goes 6 months. And it's not uncommon for the state board to take 3 years to try and get a technical solution to a state as diverse as the state of California, where you get Del Norte County, septic tank might have flowed away. In some of the desert areas, they're, you know, have very different concerns. So I just want us to start thinking through this, and especially future implementation plans. How deep can we really go in the details, as opposed to we're going to establish a program to identify the affected on sites. We're going to establish a procedure that the counties can do to take sites in and out subject to our approval. And that I also want this board steeled that it may not be possible to get everybody to agree on an on-site disposal program. That's most of my experience is they've all been over considerable ongoing opposition because it affects people's lives and, you know, who wants to write the check for, and then when you write the check, of course, you got to give the upgraded system, so it's even more than when you started. So I really, that's my concern, is that we start thinking through the implementation planning process on, one, how we get it done, how we work collaborative with people, but at the same time that we don't get sucked into determining everything on what should be, you know, the TMDL is like a general plan. The implementation is a general plan implementation. We shouldn't be down in zoning and building permits. And so that's a matter of concern I have. So with that in mind, I thank you for your work. Obviously, I'm frustrated. We're missing our deadline. I understand some of the driving forces. They're very big. They're very complex. And we have to make you don't always get what you want in this world. You have the field that you're playing on, and that's where we are. So thank you for your efforts, and this is very big. And I wish you success in diplomatically dealing and still being forthright with people on the numerous issues we have remaining.
So I didn't go and look at the full TMDL that you had written up. What's the scope of that along the river? Where does it start? And I assume it ends at the ocean, but
the scope of the TMDL is the entire Russian River watershed, so from its headwaters in Mendocino County all the way through Sonoma County, through the lower Russian into the ocean.
Whole thing. Mm-hmm. On the septic tank, so how does this TMDL, how is that going to either complement or just shirt tail onto AB 885, the septic tank laws? So how are we going to, I don't want to reinvent the wheel,
yes.
So let them be the heavies.
So that's exactly, is that the OTS policy? So this program is designed to just puzzle piece right into the statewide OTS policy. The statewide OTS policy intentionally carved out the Russian River and says this OTS policy applies statewide except in the Russian River, where a TMDL is being developed. The TMDL will be the mechanism for establishing the program. And so that's what we're engaged in right now. We are dovetailed perfectly with the statewide policy.
It may help to clarify what AB 885 was. That was the law that was passed by the legislature that required the creation of standards. In this case, the State Board came up with the on-site system policy. So that's what came out of AB 885. And this TMDL, in part, is developed to comply with the on-site system policy.
So in the TMDL, are we going to look at, in our analysis, at the point of what we have diminishing return? I mean, we can go out and make everybody fix their septic systems, but there's a point when the investment that the citizens are going to have to make or the communities are going to have to make isn't going to give us that much of a return. So are we going to look at that kind of, because of the where they're located and the soil types, that they're not going to have that big of an impact for the amount of money they spend?
Well, that's exactly what this whole priority system is about, the idea of identifying the high-risk boundary that defines the high-risk area, the area where there is the highest risk of pathogenic waste discharge. And then within that boundary, we will most certainly be prioritizing the highest of the high risk. And we happen to be really lucky to have, at the same time, gotten funds to establish a region-wide monitoring program in the Russian River. And so we'll have a really nice platform for being able to track what the effects of implementation are over time. So absolutely, there'll be a point in time where We've addressed the highest priority systems. Those are now upgraded. They're functioning properly. We can see a reduction in pathogenic waste discharge. We're no longer seeing a signature of human fecal waste in the Russian River, and we can slow off.
So that monitoring plan is built into the TMDL?
We refer in the staff report to the development of this regional Russian River monitoring plan. At the time that it was drafted last fall, we didn't yet have funding for that program. So in our revision of the staff report, you'll see more language related to the relationship between that monitoring program and this TMDL program.
And where do we get the funding?
It's a variety of sources.
And there's a article in the EO report specifically on the funding that we've received, and in my oral report later this afternoon, I'll provide some more information about that.
Funding for this monitoring program?
For the Russian River Regional Monitoring Program, as we're calling it, yeah.
So, and then, so finally, the state board decision that they are going to come up with next summer, is there... You said that there was a decision, and they are not going to come up with that.
Mm-hmm.
We aren't going to wait for that. I mean, could that impact it? So all the work we did, we have to redo?
We're fairly confident that we're on the same track. We're using the same national criteria as the basis for this project and for the statewide project. Mm-hmm. The timing is such that if we were, for example, to bring you a TMDL in May, and the state board were to adopt a bacteria objective in June, we would just wait to see what they did before we brought the TMDL to the state board for their approval. And if in the meantime we needed to adjust a load or waste load allocation, we'd have an opportunity to do that. But in terms of the basic science and data that each project is based on, it's the same. And so I'm fairly confident that we're running in parallel.
So is there any time frame or time deadline that we're working up against? Except it's nice to get it going. I understand that part.
Yeah, there is a deadline in the OTS policy itself for the development of a Russian River TMDL. Is it 2018, Charles?
Right, it says 2018, and we assume that to be December 31st, 2018.
But this board has been engaged in this particular project for a long time and has been eager to see it concluded. So we're hoping to beat that schedule, and in fact, we're hoping to have it to you next spring.
Okay.
I referred to the triennial review in the last presentation, and in the last triennial review, this board endorsed that being a priority to complete this Russian River TMDL.
Okay. I was just concerned that, you know, since there's no real, I mean, you have urgencies, but there's nothing forcing us to do something before the state has actually defined their criteria. Okay.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank
Anybody
you.
Anybody else from the board?
Okay. Thank you. We appreciate your presentation. And we have a speaker card. Brenda Edelman.
Good morning, Brenda Edelman, Russian River Watershed Protection Committee. First of all, I just really appreciate, and I know the community appreciates, your backtracking on last December's action in terms of accommodating the needs of the community, and that means a lot to many of us. I just basically have more of a question that is related to the part that you didn't really discuss today, which is the bacteria objective, and it's something that's been sticking in my head all along because it feels like a contradiction, and it may just be there's something I don't understand that someone can explain to me. But I've heard this referred to as both a bacteria TMDL and a pathogen TMDL. I've heard that it's basically to address problems with recreational use. Yet every week I get reports from the public health on bacteria readings in the lower river on beaches. They've been doing this for years. And they hardly ever show any exceedances. And that's very confusing to me. And they have the parameters. I think it's Enterococcus and E. coli that they're using now. They've switched over time. And it's my understanding that I think that's what was mentioned today, that the state was going to be basing their criteria on. And yet, no one mentioned the word bacteroides today. And that has me totally confused, because my understanding is that can be pathogenic or non-pathogenic. It just indicates there's human beings living nearby. So I have to say that if I can get clarity on this, it may help other people get clarity on it too, because frankly, I'm pretty confused as to what it is that's going to be regulated. Is it going to be all bacteria, whether they're pathogenic or not? Or is it just pathogenic bacteria you're concerned about and the specific kinds that have been identified by EPA and the state that, I mean, maybe they're looking at the bacteroides. I didn't hear it mentioned. And the other thing is, my reading of the scientific analysis was that the higher readings occurred in the wintertime when there's very little, if any, recreation. The bacteria, pathogenic readings. So that confuses me too, because on the one hand, public health is saying, well, there are some bacteria in the water, but it's considered it's safe waters and it's not a risk to people recreating in the water. And yet, on the other hand, I'm hearing you base your program on a consideration for all bacteria, and I'm just confused. So if anyone can clear that up today or another time, I'd greatly appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Does staff care to respond to that?
I will start, and you will fill in the gaps. So a couple of things, and Brenda brings up some great questions. And first, let me point out that when we do have our next workshop on this item, we'll have a much more detailed staff presentation about the technical analysis, more detail than we were intended to go into here. So that would potentially address some of the questions and confusion that Brenda was highlighting. With that said, briefly, so it is true that more of the exceedances of our water quality standards are during winter runoff events, during storms, under higher flows. Our contact and non-contact recreational beneficial uses, however, are need to be supported at all times of year. And so we need to be able to protect against folks that are recreating during the winter season. With that said, there are also exceedances during the summer period. There is regular postings by the County Department of Health Services, warning signs because of exceedances of objectives. Some of our targeted monitoring around key summer vacation periods. We did some monitoring that's in the TMDL staff report around the 4th of July weekend, I believe it was, and we show a spike of fecal indicator bacteria concentrations associated with that public recreation. So so we need to be addressing the TMDL for all times of year, because we do see exceedances during summer periods as well as winter periods. With regard, so this is a, we call it an indicator bacteria pathogen TMDL, and we get it. I understand that that's a little confusing. The primary focus is on pathogenic bacteria that can make people sick. So we're not talking about types of bacteria that don't cause illness. There are many different types of bacteria, pathogens, viruses. The water quality standards that are written are typically for indicator bacteria, and the science for measuring these types of indicator bacteria has evolved over time. So what's currently in our basin plan for fecal and total coliform has now been determined to really not be an adequate measure of the types of indicator bacteria that make people sick. And so the federal US EPA's criteria are using E. coli and Enterococcus, and those are the measures that we have drafted our TMDL to meet.
The only thing I think I'd add to that is just to say a little bit more about pathogens generally, that they are a wide collection of organisms, including viruses and cysts like Giardia, as well as bacteria. And what the indicator bacteria is a, E. coli is an indicator bacteria. It indicates the presence of fecal waste. And that's important because it's the transmission of fecal waste to a contact with a human that is the pathway of pathogenic impact. And that pathogenic impact may be as a result of viruses or cysts or other organisms beyond the E. coli bacteria itself. It's just that bacteria indicates the presence of fecal waste. The Bactroides analysis that we did as part of the TMDL helps us then, because all of these indicators are simply indicators. They have each one of them has ways in which they're very strong indicators and other circumstances or characteristics that which is the downside. And so it's useful to have multiple indicators. And Bactroides helps us refine the understanding of whether or not the understanding from an E. coli or Enterococcus finding of whether or not that fecal waste is human-sourced, domestic animal-sourced, related to a bovine creature, or a bird, for example. And so that was helpful in our TMDL analysis because we were able to say with some certainty that places, for example, that have a high density of septic systems with close to a river, we could show the clear evidence of human fecal waste entering the water. And that's what we're looking to control with this TMDL, is to arrest the delivery of human fecal waste to the water.
Yeah.
What I suggest, Brenda, is that we set up a meeting and have Steve Butkus, who is our technical developer, present so that we can go through each of the strengths and weaknesses of these indicators. I'm afraid I do an inadequate job of explaining it here. And
thank you for your response.
Yeah.
I'll do that. Yeah. I had one more question. So how are we going to, or are we going to even go there about the encampments? I mean, that doesn't get picked up on parcel density.
No, it doesn't. And it's one of the topics that we're discussing with Sonoma County in the development of this memorandum of understanding. They have a homeless program, and so we're looking at that with them as a vehicle for dealing with water quality issues as well. But that's part of the negotiations with them.
Just a follow-up on that, Alita. So There are also opportunities for recreational use on the river where people may spend a day on a raft or some other floating device, and there are no facilities for people along the river. There are no blue rooms anywhere. Along with the homeless encampments, there's another opportunity for human waste to get in the river. Are you having those discussions with Sonoma County as well?
Yes. Those three topics, recreational users, homeless encampments, which, we're broadly using that term to also include illegal camping and other activities where people are camping on a waterway, and septic systems are the three topics that we have under consideration with this MOU.
Thank you. So since this is an update, are there public speaking slips, any further ones? Okay. Then I almost think it doesn't pay to get started on the small and disadvantaged communities because it's past 12. So I'd like to recess for 1 hour. We have an executive session. We have our lunches are ordered, but I threw in a couple extra minutes for the public because I've been out there, and if we make it too short, you can't get your lunch in time. And so we'll reconvene at 1:05.
Excuse me, Chair Corbett. Yeah, just for the record, just would like to make the announcement that the board will be meeting in closed session to discuss item 10E3, and that's the Regional Water Quality Control Board denial of Humboldt Redwood Company's request for enrollment of Timber Harvest Plan 112110, and the board is currently in litigation over that.
Okay, thank you. With that, 105.